Welcome to the Beverage Click Podcast, discussions revolving around drinks with an Asian perspective. I'm your resident host, Sean Oh, certified beverage specialist and co-founder of the Beverage Click Academy in Singapore. And here is this month's episode.
And welcome back to another episode of the Beverage Click Podcast. This episode, we have traveled all the way to Chiba Prefecture in Japan and to meet up with my very good and old friend of mine, Mehdi. I need to pronounce your name fully. Mehdi Alexandra Medava?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay.
Very nice.
I've known you for so long and I still can't pronounce your name properly. So sorry about that. konnichiwa, Mehdi. Or should I say bonjour?
Bonjour.
Yeah. Mehdi is a French native, but also residing in Japan for some time already.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's really great having you on air and to speak a little bit more about yourself as well as the sake you're making. What got you into sake?
Well, just the taste, and it's really amazing. It's challenging also. Mm-hmm. The process, the making process is also very mysterious. And at least when I was in France and I tasted for the first time and start to look about it, and it appears me really mysterious, and so
that was when you first had your first glass of sake
in 2011, I think,
in France, with
someone really special to me.
Oh,
we had it,
and okay,
we have discovered the sake together.
Okay.
Yeah. First time.
Yeah. Like, well, the person is no longer here, though.
No, yeah.
Well, that's fine. It's fine. I mean, you've come so far in your sake journey. How is it been, I mean, for you? And, you know, maybe you could just tell all the listeners on how your journey has been for sake. When you first arrived.
I moved to Japan.
Yeah.
Like, that was the first and maybe the easiest step in the journey. Just taking the decisions to move. And then arrive to Japan, start to learn Japanese, at the same time start to look for a brewery to welcome me. And then I finally, after 3-4 months, find a place to welcome me. And then the real sake journey have started. And yeah.
It was Kamui Zumi, right? Was it?
Okazaki Shuzo, Nagano. Very small at the time, really small scale brewery. Now they increase their volumes, mm-hmm. their productions, and they are really well known. They are in the top of ranking of like Japanese sake. But yeah, at the time I started there, they were like so minor, but it was good to start from this kind of. With this kind of brewery, because like I was just making sake at the same time, taking care of their kids and just
you're taking care of kids.
Yeah, of their kids and it was soft and smooth, yeah. Rhythm and not too intense, and so I could start safely and
yeah. How long were you there? Okazaki?
In like 5 months.
Okay.
But the rhythm was really slow. So each step, I could understand what I was doing each step by step. And yeah, it was really nice.
So after those 5 months, you decided to move on to
a bigger company that can also hire me and give me a visa.
Yeah, which was crazy. Like,
no. It was... Gassan.
Gassan.
Yoshida Shuzo.
Hi.
So in Shimane.
Okay.
And it was the first time also I got also salary, because I wasn't paid at Okazaki Shuzo.
Right.
So yeah, they offered me a salary, and it was a bigger scale brewery and with hierarchy, and so I was an employee.
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned a lot, how more than sake making, but how to behave in a Japanese company, and the rules, the hierarchy. It was hard also. Like we had no bathroom. The bathroom was
no bathroom.
The bathroom was was in the brewery, inside the brewery, just between the big mashes vats, yeah. Tanks. Just there, it was a small kind of bath, and we used to fill it with the water we were heat up to make sake or to clean things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. We were only three of us there. So, and my room was just in the second floor, just on the top of the Yabuta. And Yabuta was doing so much noise, and the pressing machine was doing so much noise. And just a few meters away was the polishing machine that was always like 24 hours running, so making such noise. But I was so tired, so I didn't like even notice. Or yeah.
Wow, and, okay. That's quite an experience. And yeah. Then how long was it?
6 months. But had some trouble with employees, and so needed to leave. It was better for the company that I leave.
Okay.
But yeah, 6 very full and intense months.
Yeah, well, I'm sure you still learned a lot from yeah, that period of time.
I say he was my first Toji at the time. The guy, the Toji, he was my first Toji. And still now, he's like, what he was saying to me, it's still in my mind.
Right. Okay, that's good to know. So, and then you moved
to Kamoizumi.
To Kamoizumi.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
In Hiroshima.
I'm learning new things now. Okay. So after that, you moved to Kamoizumi. Okay.
Yes.
And then?
I stayed there for a year and a half. And again, we were on very, like, we were a small team. Like only three of us were making sake. We're making 1,600 koku. Mm-hmm. That's mean around 300,000 bottle. Just only three of us.
That's about medium size, right?
Yeah, it's a medium size. But in one time when we say the shikomi for one vat, we were using 4 ton of rices. Mm. And it was still like manual, handcrafted labor. So it was kind of hard time, but it gave me the opportunity to also learn more about bigger scales productions. Still all handcrafted, but was good. Also, Hiroshima sake has a unique profiles, aromatic profiles, vision. So it was nice to.
Yeah. Well, I've been to Kamoizumi.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the past. So that was quite an experience. And then after that, you moved to Kueji.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So how long were you there for at Kueji for?
5 years.
5 years. Wow, yeah. That's a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you feel that that was the most that you learned in a sake brewery? Or was it different?
Yeah, it was different. Yeah, I've learned a lot. Yeah, 5 years just happened so quickly. And yeah, what I've learned the most, being more really constant in work, in the approach. Also, of course, that rice cultivation, farming part was big at Kueji. Mm. It took basically half of the year. So
the farming part, right?
The farming part, yeah. Farming part. So it was quite tight, like schedule between the production and the cultivation, and the farming. And then also they produce wine, so they send me in France for 8 months to build up the company, the wine company.
Oh yeah, they have a in Burgundy, right?
Yes, in Burgundy. In Mauressandine, they have 2.5 hectares, and they do right. also they are also negotiants. So So we buy grape. And so, yeah, like it gave me also the opportunity to build some connections, some bonds with like France, this French sommelier and French, savoir-faire. So
That sounds good.
Yeah, it was very nice experience.
Yeah. And then now to Tarada Honke.
Oh, I mean, Tarada Honke.
Well, it's a very unique brewery for sure. Yeah. I mean, the stylistically, it's very, very different from the tasting you've just brought me through and, you know, tasting the different types of sake. Very different from Koeji for sure.
Yes, from most of the breweries in Japan.
Yeah, yeah. Because you've worked in many different breweries, how or do you think that there is very distinct differences from each and one of them? Or, you know, or is it just the same but different?
No, it's really different. Like some breweries, they do so much, they focus on things that other breweries are not focusing on, or they are almost skipping it. So sometimes you get like you don't understand anymore what is important, because each brewery, they focus on different things. So, okay. And they value things, but all the ones value different things. So, okay, what is important? What lead to good sake making? So it's kind of, you build things inside yourself, and then you have to crush everything.
Yeah. But can you maybe give us a more tangible example, like what was so different in terms of philosophy? I mean, just looking at the sake, like for example, from Tarada Honke, I can tell that it's more towards the natural, lesser polished philosophy. But then again, Koeji also goes towards natural, isn't it?
Like first, some breweries, they only use like sakamai. Mm-hmm. So, rice variety that are made exclusively to produce sake. And for example, here we almost don't use like rice variety that are made to produce sake, but sake are really complex and really incredible in taste, in every aspect of the taste. So yeah, so how is the impact of rice, what is really suitable rice to make sake, is something that you don't, of course, it's easy to produce a high amount of alcohol or sake with Yamada Nishiki, but with Koshihikari, which is stable variety rice, you can also make complex sake with high volume of or rate of alcohol. So it's how in the practice itself, like some places they tend to do a lot of analysis and to rely on data. But in Tarada Honke, for example, we rely on data, but we don't make too much analysis. So also we don't clean so much with soap, and while other breweries, they tend to like sterilize everything. So
yeah.
It's the approaches are so different, but they all lead to good and qualitative sake. So it's more how you feel as a producer, what you want to do, which kind of environment you want to work in. But yeah, sakamai, table rice variety, or like, do you value more like organic approach? It's all about choices.
Yeah.
There's no one way. It's more about choice. So yeah. So
no one's doing it wrongly, I'd say.
It's just choice.
Yeah.
What you choose to do. That gives so much also possibility to sake.
I agree. Well, since we're in Tarada Honke, so maybe, you know, we could talk a little bit more about the brand.
Sure.
Tell us a little bit more about the history of Tarada Honke. Well, you shared a little bit earlier about the owner, so I think that was quite insightful.
Well, it's really like an old brewery. They started in Shiga, so in more southern part of Japan, 350 years ago. So we celebrate the anniversary this year of the brewery. So they started there, and then when Edo has been created, near Tokyo, like it was an opportunity also for breweries to move and to be close to the new like capital. So they moved there, and so it was really conventional, like all other breweries at that time. But 40 years ago, like the previous owner, he got ill. Mm-hmm. He almost died from a disease, so he thought that it would be good to make healthier sake, more natural, with more natural way making. So he started to research and to avoid all like pesticides and fertilizers, and use only organic raw materials. And then also he avoid addition of microorganisms. So it's been like 40 years that we are working only with the like ambient yeast, mm-hmm, and microorganisms. So it's all spontaneous fermentations. Also the polishing like step. Most of the sake are used, are made with almost unpolished rice. Or
lightly polished.
Very lightly polished rice. So it gives a very thick and taste and very full-bodied taste to the sake. Of course, there is a lot of compound that reminds. So all the microorganisms, they are fed so much that they create a lot of acidity. Mm-hmm. So they are more mouthfeel sake than aromatic sake, but it give them ability also for aging.
So the direction is not just about organic or even natural, it's also about having something that's a lot fuller, maybe more food friendly, you think? Does it go better with food, or you think it's okay to just drink it like that?
It's good with both. Like, of course, with food, it match and paired really well. Mm. But yeah, because of the heaviness, it can be just drank like this.
Yeah.
They are heavy. They are almost like...
Yeah, it's a full body.
Brute.
They are quite full bodied sake.
Full bodied sake.
Yeah.
Like almost, they seems to be not worked like, but they have their structure and their different tasting levels. Mm.
So because we tasted five, are these the only five? Do you have more products?
No, we have more. Yeah.
What's the total product type?
About 10 cuvées. Yeah.
10 cuvées. Oh man, if I stay here longer, I think I'll probably be drunk. Yeah. As you might already can tell, we're a little bit slurring because we've been drinking for some time before the recording. So
we've tasted a lot.
Yeah, we tasted quite a bit, and you know, again, thank you for that. Right, so it's a very interesting sake for sure. Do they have any future plans in terms of domestic or even international? Because I know in Singapore they have an important sake tent.
Yeah, like we cannot extend so much the production. So
your current production volume is what?
It's about 200,000 bottles.
200,000. That is less than 1,000 koku.
Yes, exactly. It's about 900 koku.
Smaller than a medium size.
900 koku. So yeah, it's kind of medium, so a little bit lower than medium. So now we are reaching the maximum of the capacity. So we are just we're stuck there.
Yeah, I mean, I see the sake quite common when I arrived in Chiba. I see it quite commonly around. So this is considered like a G sake in a way.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So probably not sold outside of Chiba that much.
No, in all the country, and we receive a lot of offers and demands from countries that from overseas distributors too, but we cannot fulfill their needs or their demands.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, it's that kind of quantity.
Yes.
It's not easy to achieve for sure.
Yes.
How many employees are there here?
Now we are 20.
20 employees.
20 employees, but like with all the like logistical, with the office people.
Ah, okay.
So right, yeah, right. Like as brewer, we are only five, six.
Oh, Kurabito. As well as Toji.
Okay. Yes.
Oh, good to know. Right. What about, I mean, because you're technically a foreigner, right? And like yourself, there are many foreigners that have been aspiring to come to Japan to pick up the skill of sake making, you know, working in a brewery. Do you have any advice for them if anybody is aspiring to come here, you know, to try their hand at making sake? Because I know for a fact that I've been traveling to many breweries and I know it's not easy, right? It is a tough life. So if you think that it's going to be a walk in the park, it's not. But, you know, based on your words,
it takes time.
It takes time?
Yeah. Don't hurry. Don't seek to learn fast.
So how keep, long?
Like, take time. And also try to move from a brewery to another. When you are inside a brewery, you grow into the hierarchy. You get a lot of privileges. Like, you do less.
Okay. Yeah, you because do you're less. Senior now, right?
Yeah, so. You're senior, so it's easy. It's easy, you don't do the low tasks, but...
It's when you do the low tasks that you learn.
Yes. So just throw away your privileges to move to another place and start again from the bottom.
Well, that's not easy. It's literally leaving your comfort zone.
It's, yeah, leave your comfort zone. That's, don't be afraid to, yeah, destroy all your bases.
Well, it's tough for sure because we're talking about leaving comfort zones, but you've left like 5 comfort zones already. We have to talk about your personal plans in the future for yourself. Anything that you would like to share with anyone, or you know, that's not too sensitive. What do you think?
Anyone who has money to lose.
I
can give it to me.
Well, we just had this conversation early on that. Maybe he's intending eventually to move back to France to make sake. So I think he has quite a bit planned out already. You also have an investor, obviously.
Yes.
But you're still looking for people to invest in your business, you know, and to believe in French sake.
Yes.
Eventually. Well, I definitely think there's a market there. So it just depends on, you know, what you eventually do with it. What you're gonna craft,
exactly,
and how's the response in France first domestically, and then we'll see how it goes overseas. And I'm sure there are a lot of collaborations that you can think of eventually, right?
You already have a palette for you,
right? Okay,
for Singaporean market,
I will keep that in mind for sure. Yeah, okay. I think that's probably a good time to also wrap up our episode. So, Mehdi, thank you so much for doing this short interview. You know, I love seeing you again, being here and knowing what you've been doing. So it's a privilege. I hope to be back this next time. Maybe even bring some students along if possible.
Sure.
Before you leave. Okay. And that wraps up our episode for the Beverage Clip Podcast. Look forward to seeing you soon. Thank you very much, Mehdi.
Welcome.
Yeah. Cheers.
Cheers.